Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, June 17th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, no King's protest takes to Eureka Street, centering anti-fascism messaging. Humboldt approves multi-million dollar homelessness help. And CAL FIRE to suspend burning in Western Trinity County. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County residents showed up in force to Eureka's No Kings rally, making for the largest protest in the area in several years. While the protest had been planned and permitted, some rallygoers and organizers were dismayed by activists and protesters taking over Highway 101 around the county courthouse, despite there being very little space remaining on sidewalks flanking 5th Street. Ryan Hudson at Humboldt Freelance has the report.
A significant display of public dissent unfolded in Eureka this past Saturday as thousands of residents exercised their constitutional rights to peacefully assemble for a redress of grievances and protest at the No Kings rally, along with over 2,000 similar rallies planned and coordinated coast to coast. There was even a small but mighty group protesting in downtown Petrolia. Humboldt County locals voiced a wide range of concerns about government overreach, addressing everything from policing to program funding from California to the Middle East. Eureka's rally began at Matticutt Square in Old Town, where speeches and performances were offered, followed by a march through the city, which eventually arrived to join several hundred additional protesters at the county courthouse. Among the passionate speeches offered at Matticutt Plaza prior to marching to the courthouse was one from Brenda Perez of Centro del Pueblo. Perez, whose organization has been advocating for local immigrant rights and community awareness since 2017, highlighted the importance of solidarity and community action, reminding attendees at the rally of the significant milestone when Humboldt County passed the first sanctuary ballot measure in the state by voter referendum.
Because 7 years ago, we were sitting right here, standing right here, speaking out for sanctuary. And today we have to protect it. We have it now, we have to protect it. What is next is to protect our right to protest. And let's walk in the Matticutt Plaza with our allies and accomplices. Yeah. Yeah. Trump is just the tip of the iceberg. But that iceberg is melting, my friends. That iceberg is melting. We have our words, but we also have our actions. Let's try and translate this energy, this protest, into our daily lives. Let's be kind to each other. Let's talk about our words in every day, in every step. Let's just don't congregate in the plazas and then go back to the same. Take this chance for transform, to support each other.
Later at the courthouse, at age 100, was none other than World War II Army veteran Staff Sergeant of the 101st Airborne Division, George K. Mullins. He decided to attend the rally to express his opposition to what he called a dictator in President Trump. In a candid live interview, Mullins told us, "I'm strictly against a dictator," he said, adding, "I put one down and I'm doing my best to put this one down."
I'm strictly against a dictator. I put one down, and I'm doing my best to put this one down. These people speak for myself and the way I see things.
With the cooperation of the Eureka Police Department and the California Highway Patrol, protesters filled the streets, demonstrating with bullhorns, drums, protest banners, and signs. This No Kings rally, in contrast to previous rallies at the courthouse within the past few months, included many voices from the immigrant diaspora, along with youthful participants from Gen Z and millennial generations. At the courthouse, the sidewalks were packed, leaving little space for those marching from Old Town to congregate, at which point the crowd swelled into the three lanes of traffic on 5th Street going north. Although there were moments of tension as protesters occupied the streets of downtown Eureka, Eureka Police Chief Brian Stevens confirmed that there were no arrests and that he considered everything to have been peaceful.
Our streets! Our streets! Our streets! Our streets! Our streets! Our streets! Our streets!
Eureka Police Chief Brian Stevens estimated the crowd to be about 4,000 people when we spoke to him after the event.
Yeah, it was very large. It was mostly peaceful until, you know, the march that was going from the Madigan Plaza up to the courthouse took over the road.
Uh-huh.
There was a lot of people. We probably felt that that was going to happen, but then they decided to just occupy the road because there's not enough room on the courthouse steps for everyone. So we made the decision at that point to close down the road just to keep both the vehicular traffic, pedestrian traffic, and those attending the demonstration safe.
Yeah.
And that seemed to work pretty well for us today.
Okay.
Just now opened up the road. Appreciate everyone just keeping it as peaceful as they did, and the traffic and everybody working with us and CHP for their help today, but just keeping everybody safe. So that's what we're out here for.
Okay, thank you. And I wanted to ask, any counter-protesters show up today?
There were signs that I seen as far as people had different opinions of what was being protested today, but
sure.
We didn't have any known interactions that caused us to have to respond to anything.
Right.
We've made no arrests. We've had to be involved with nothing inside the protest. We made some traffic stops just due to reckless driving, inappropriate driving through the demonstration area prior to us closing the street because it's just unsafe. But those people were all warned and released with an education. So,
to find information about future protests and related actions, you can go to humdem.com. That's humdem.com to see what they have planned locally, or go to 5051. To see what the nationwide grassroots protest website has scheduled. This is Ryan Hudson for KMUD News.
The California Public Utilities Commission will hold in-person public forums in Eureka tomorrow for the public to share input regarding Verizon's acquisition of Frontier Companies in California. Tasid Shamin, the public information officer for the CPUC, spoke to KMUD News to help better understand what this potential merger between Verizon and Frontier will bring.
Yeah, of course. So the California Public Utilities Commission, we call it CPUC just because it's easier to say, but basically we're a regulatory agency, so we're part of the state government. And so we regulate a lot of the utility companies that you see. So whether it's in energy, water division, we also have broadband telecommunications, we have rail safety. One of the things that we do often is you'll see is where, whether it's like a rate case that we're trying to regulate, or if there's, you know, a utility company is trying to either raise their rates or they're trying to ask for different provisions in their programs. And so anytime there's sort of a change in the utility company, and if it's in the best interest of the public, we have to sort of, you know, approve that or do a hearing and really see, you know, what is going on. And so essentially our divisions are energy, broadband telecommunications, water, and rail safety. And so those are sort of the utilities that we regulate.
The CPUC will be holding virtual and in-person public meetings to understand the public outlook on this decision and how it might affect the public or long-term benefits. CPUC will also work with Verizon and the public, if approved, to ensure that they will continue to uphold all of the frontier's existing regulatory operations, either by improving or to continue to implement them.
Just to take a bit of a step back, so the CPUC, you know, they're holding in-person and virtual public forums to essentially hear what consumers think about Verizon Communications and Frontier Communications request. And for Verizon to acquire Frontier's California operations. And so this is a joint request. And so the way it kind of came about is it happened in sort of October 2024. Verizon and Frontier submitted a joint application to the CPUC seeking approval for Verizon to acquire Frontier and its California subsidiaries. And so if this is approved, Verizon would assume all of Frontier's existing regulatory operations, including the service commitments tied to the California Advanced Services Fund, the federal funding account, federal Rural Digital Opportunity Fund Phase 1 grants, carrier last resort, and a lot of these initiatives that sort of happen at the CPUC. And so one of the things that the CPUC is doing is whenever, you know, companies merge or, you know, different companies sort of try to, you know, buy out other companies, we want to make sure that it's in the public's best interest. And so, you know, this includes, you know, assessing, you know, potential impacts on service quality, competition, financial stability, and like long-term benefits to customers and communities. And so the CPUC is also going to evaluate whether Verizon can maintain or improve upon Frontier's current obligations and services, but particularly in rural and underserved areas.
An in-person hearing will happen tomorrow at the Eureka City Council Chambers at 531 K Street, Eureka, California. CPUC is seeking customer feedback to understand how the proposed acquisition might affect them. Written comments are also welcomed and accepted. More information can be found at www.cpuc.ca.gov/PPH. KMUD News will continue with updating the story as it evolves. Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors took action to address homelessness and honor the Golden Rule Peace Boat and the upcoming Juneteenth Day. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County is using $4.6 million in state funding to shelter and assist homeless people. At its June 10th meeting, the County Board of Supervisors approved spending the state funds, awarded through the state's Homeless Housing Assistance and Prevention Program. The funding will pay for a variety of services, including preventative services like rental assistance and support of new and existing housing and sheltering projects. The state funding is the outcome of collaboration between the county and the Humboldt Housing and Homelessness Coalition. Much of it will be divided between the Arcata House Partnership, the City of Eureka, and the Redwood Community Action Agency, and the 211 Humboldt Information and Resource Center. A funding request from Redwood's Rural Health Center to support a team of specialists and case managers was not recommended for funding and wasn't approved. But the funding overall is substantial, as noted by Supervisor Rex Bone.
There's about $5.6 million being doled out today to help with people with housing needs and homeless people. That's just today. This doesn't count the buildings that City of Eureka is building. It doesn't even count. So when people come up and ask, what are you doing about the homeless problem or issue or needs? It feels like we're doing everything we can. And I think our staff is doing everything we can. And we're trying to utilize as much federal and state monies as we can. I don't know if we're making any ground, but we certainly give it an effort.
Also approved by supervisors was another $1.1 million of funding from the County Social Services Fund for the Redwood Community Action Agency's Parents and Children in Transition program. Also during the meeting, a proclamation was approved commemorating the 10th splashiversary of the Golden Rule, a 34-foot wooden peace boat described as, quote, a powerful symbol of peace, environmental responsibility, and nuclear disarmament. Docked at Humboldt Bay, the sailboat's achievements and revival is described in the proclamation, which was read aloud by Supervisor Mike Wilson.
And whereas their mission and nonviolent resistance helped spark the international movement against nuclear weapons, contributing to the Partial Test Ban Treaty of 1963 and inspiring generations of peace activists worldwide. And whereas after decades of disuse and deterioration, the Golden Rule was rediscovered and rescued from a Humboldt Bay boatyard in 2010 and lovingly restored over 5 years by local volunteers, Veterans for Peace, and a network of dedicated supporters and Humboldt community. It wasn't just in the boatyard, it was actually on the bottom of the bay. It had sunk in and it was in the rears for its the money it owed the marina. But we worked that all out when I was on the district to help them get that out of there. Whereas since her relaunch in Humboldt Bay on June 20th in 2015, the Golden Rule has sailed more than 20,000 miles, visiting dozens of ports, communities across North America and Hawaii to educate, inspire, and rally support for a nuclear-free, peaceful world.
The June 14th Splashiversary event was supposed to include a launch of the boat, but due to complications, the event shifted to the dry land of the Eureka Theater. Also during the meeting, supervisors approved a proclamation honoring Juneteenth Day, June 19th, which commemorates the end of slavery in the United States. Wilson read the proclamation, which describes the meaning and intent of Juneteenth.
It stands as a powerful symbol of resilience, liberation, and the ongoing pursuit of justice and equality for Black Americans, while honoring their strength, contributions, and perseverance throughout history. And whereas Humboldt County is dedicated to fostering an environment of understanding, respect, inclusion, and recognizes the importance of acknowledging our individual and collective experiences and history to promote a more just and unified community. And whereas Juneteenth serves as a reminder that work remains to be done in to ensure equitable access to opportunity for Black residents, including the pursuit of strategies to improve access to education, economic development, housing, and land-based initiatives.
As noted in the proclamation, Eureka NAACP will host a Juneteenth cultural festival from June 19th to June 22nd at Halverson Park in Eureka. It will include what's described as educational workshops, cultural performances, and community gatherings. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection Humboldt Del Norte Unit announces that due to an increase in fire activity, higher temperatures, lower fuel moistures, and minimal precipitation in the forecast, the threat of wildfire impacting life, property, or natural resources is detectable. KMUD News spoke with Jeremy Ward, the battalion chief with the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Fire Prevention Bureau, on why Western Trinity will be suspending its burnings.
Because for a couple reasons. One, we try and work in conjunction with the Shasta Trinity unit, which because of the way the boundaries work, we cover part of Trinity County, whereas the Shasta Trinity CAL FIRE unit covers the eastern portion of Trinity County. So to try and minimize some of the confusion for Trinity County residents, again, our unit chief, Chief McRae, worked with the unit chief in the Shasta Trinity unit to try and simplify things and do it together. The other reason is because, you know, Trinity County being more inland, things are starting to become warmer and drier out there, which means that the wildland fuels are becoming more susceptible to burning. And with that, you know, we want to reduce the number of ignitions. Unfortunately, not everyone always burns safely. And because of that, you know, every year we do have to suspend burning at some point because, you know, these fires can escape and we want to eliminate that.
CAL FIRE continues to increase staffing and introduce other fire units to other resources that are available in times of need. Stations have also started their onboarding for seasonal firefighters for the upcoming fire season. CAL FIRE is monitoring other units and region-wide fire activity in order to work in conjunction to help reduce confusion amongst county boundaries and what resources are available.
When it comes to the suspension, we look at region-wide fire activity. We look at what other units are doing. Again, like I mentioned earlier, trying to work in conjunction with some other units to reduce some of the confusion, especially when units cross county boundaries. What are the resource availability is that we have, or resources assigned out of the area. So there's a lot of factors that do go into it. But, basically what it comes down to is, as the weather becomes hotter and drier, the likelihood of an unwanted ignition increases. So we need to take some steps to try and reduce those.
Ward expresses cautionary steps that the public can take to help prevent a wildfire as well as keep your surroundings safe. Here is what you can do.
Since burning has not been suspended in Humboldt and Del Norte counties, this is a good opportunity to spread the message for the folks who are still wishing to burn and want to do so, legally with their air quality and CAL FIRE burn permits, is to take a couple of steps to make sure that their fires don't escape. They are responsible for, following the terms of those permits. And the biggest thing that I see as a fire investigator that leads to these debris burn escapes is generally one of a few factors or a combination of. And that means, or that usually involves people who don't remain in attendance to their burn, people who don't clear around their burn piles, and or they burn when it's windy or it's forecasted to be windy. So if folks take the time, make sure that they're following the steps that are required by that permit, they're much less likely to have an escape. The other thing that I would like to add is to ensure that the folks who are wishing to burn on a permissive burn day are making sure that they're calling the numbers on their burn permits to notify the respective agencies that they'll be burning. That helps reduce us from sending resources unnecessarily out to, an incident that we may know already exists and is under control. Now, if something is a fire escapes, then certainly we want that called in, but we want to try and reduce the number of unnecessary responses and reduce that exposure to our responders.
Helpful tips can be found on readyforwildfire.org and preventwildfireca.org. In state news, in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Press Club, an investigative news outlet, Status Coop, have filed a federal lawsuit against the LAPD, alleging repeated violations of journalist rights under the U.S. Constitution and California law. The suit, filed today in federal court, claims officers used excessive force against reporters covering recent protests sparked by ICE raids in the region. Journalists were allegedly shot with so-called less lethal munitions, charged by police horses, and physically blocking from filming. Adam Rose, press rights chair for the LAPC, said the group is standing up for its nearly 1,000 members who deserve to report the news without risking their safety. Attorney Carol Sobel, lead counsel in the case, added, in quote, "Our democracy depends on an informed public. When press rights are threatened, it's the public that suffers," end quote. The lawsuit also invokes Senate Bill 9-8, which makes it illegal for police to obstruct or assault journalists, and Assembly Bill 48, which restricts law enforcement's use of projectiles and chemical agents during protests. The case Los Angeles Press Club versus City of Los Angeles was filed in U.S. District Court for the Central District of California. You can read the full complaint at KMUD.org. In national news, Israeli attack on Iran raises fears of regional conflagration as diplomats call for de-escalation. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
Israel's attacks on Iran targeted nuclear enrichment facilities, ballistic missile sites, and top Iranian generals and nuclear scientists. It's a move Israel says was necessary to prevent attacks that would threaten the very survival of Israel.
Never again is now.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced the strikes, dubbed Operation Rising Lion, in a video message.
Today, Israel has shown that we have learned the lessons of history. When enemies vow to destroy you, believe them. When enemies build weapons of mass death, stop them. As the Bible teaches us, when someone comes to kill you, rise and act first. This is exactly what Israel has done today. We have risen like lions to defend ourselves.
Netanyahu says the strikes will continue for, in his words, as many days as it takes to remove the threat. He also thanked President Donald Trump for confronting Iran over its nuclear enrichment program.
Remember, Iran calls Israel the small Satan. It calls America the great Satan. And this is why for decades, it's led millions in the chance of death to Israel and death to America. Today, Israel is responding to those genocidal calls with action and with a call of our own. Long live Israel and long live America.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres issued a statement condemning the escalation in the Middle East, especially as Iran and the U.S. are engaged in talks on Iran's nuclear program. His remarks were read by a spokesperson.
The Secretary General recalls the obligation of UN member states to act in accordance with the UN Charter and international law. The Secretary General asks both sides to show maximum restraint, avoiding at all costs a descent into deeper conflict, a situation that the region can hardly afford.
Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danon, spoke to reporters in New York, dismissing Guterres' remarks and saying he's been silent in the face of Iran's aggression. He called the attacks a calculated and necessary action based on clear intelligence. He says the Iranian threat took a dramatic turn in recent months.
According to the latest IAEA reports, Iran now has enough material for multiple nuclear weapons and has moved dangerously close to operational capability. What's more, Israel uncovered clear evidence that the Iranian regime was planning a surprise attack in coordination with their proxies. They had planned to invade from all sides with thousands of terrorists and thousands of projectiles.
Danon was speaking shortly before an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council, where diplomats from around the world called for de-escalation. Iran's ambassador called the attacks a violation of international law. He says the attacks killed 78 people, including civilians.
Last night, the Israeli regime, the most dangerous and terrorist regime in the world, with full intelligence and political support from the United States regime, conducted a series of coordinated and premeditated military attacks across multiple cities in Iran.
He says the U.S. and Israel will be responsible for the consequences. The U.S. ambassador, in addition to mentioning what he calls Donald Trump's sweeping election mandate, said Iran cannot be allowed to have nuclear weapons.
The United States was informed of the strikes ahead of time, but was not militarily involved in these strikes. Our absolute foremost priority is the protection of U.S. citizens, personnel, and forces in the region.
Israel's attacks on Iran have been followed by Iranian rocket attacks on Israel. The U.S. is sending more naval forces and fighter jets to the region. Meanwhile, others are calling for restraint and de-escalation. Algeria's ambassador spoke at the Security Council hearing.
These attacks prove that the only thing that preemptive action could prevent is peace.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
For tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips. And thanks to our reporters, Ryan Hudson, Daniel Mintz, and Sigur Bjorn. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.